Good morning, everyone. Are you awake and ready? Om Babaji, Om Jesus Christ, Om Lahari Mahashai, Om Swami Sri Yukteswarji, Om Master, Om Mother, saints and sages of all religions, we bow to all of you. Free our lives from all obstacles, and give us physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only king, reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Peace, bliss, amen. Reading to you from the posting this morning entitled, Standing on the Threshold of Eternity. That's a quote from the lyrics of San Damiano from the movie or the film Brother, Sun, Sister, Moon, about St. Francis of Assisi, and they're written by Donovan. If you want your dream to be, build it slow and surely. Small beginnings, greater ends, heartfelt work grows slow purely. If you want to live life free, take your time, go slowly. Do few things, but do them well. Simple joys are holy. Day by day, stone by stone, build your secret slowly. Day by day, you'll grow too. You'll know heaven's glory. Isn't that a beautiful lyrics to that song? The air trembles, the earth is quiet, heaven and nature merge, and the field of infinite power and consciousness waits. This is a perfect moment. And what the Lord chooses or not chooses is held in His almighty hand. For I am wrapped in His ecstasy, and there is nowhere I would rather be. He wants me to be His witness, a reporter from the front lines of God consciousness, to speak only the truth of what He gives me, what He reveals to me and makes me experience. I had not intended to write these words, but out they came with His power. I had not intended to write the lyrics to Donovan's song, but he put them into my mind, and once they were expressed, I had thought to write about doing his work in the coming year, day by day, stone by stone. Then I found myself standing on the threshold of eternity. He gave me the above experience, and he made me write it out. And this is his way, at least with me. He does not care to consult me in his work. Rather, he likes to get me out of his way and let him do it. And whether I look the fool or express his greatest truths is not up to me, for it is only he, only he. To stand on the threshold of eternity and sing his song is all there is. And if my voice, my mind, and my heart cannot contain his melody, then he makes me mute and expresses himself through the great silence. For he is the way. He is the life. He is the all in all. There is nothing but he. These words are stillborn unless he gives them life and life eternal. For I am his heart and mind and soul. He is my beloved, my infinite beloved. Oh, how he rants and makes me his sacrifice. This threshold trembles with his power, and it is awe-inspiring. What my Lord is cannot be fitted into the small compartments of words. I can only point so that others are directed towards his infinite presence. I am but his minion, and the I is crushed into his holy dust. I am destroyed by him, yet I live. Such is the great paradox of his creation. Do not be afraid, he whispers, for all is well, all is he, all is the sacred sacrifice for his sacred feast, for he consumes what he creates, and all becomes he, all merges into his bliss. None of what I write here can fit into a box, nor a maxim, not even into a thought, but must be experienced to be appreciated. For these are his thoughts, and they are mighty and beyond mind. For they are not my own. He must reveal their truth, their essence, if they are to be truly known. For I stand on the threshold of eternity. God experience is the most tremendous thing that we can experience in this life. We have all set out with that in mind, those of us who follow this path. And yet many are the obstacles that come. And we look to build his church. I'm reminded of St. Francis, and when he had a revelation from God, and God told him to rebuild his church. And he looked around at the old church that he is in, and it was in a bad state of repair. So he thought, oh, I'm to rebuild this church then. And there was a priest who was there. There's a lovely depiction of this in a book that I read many years ago, The Perfect Joy of St. Francis by Felix Timmermans. And in this, he has a type of guru-disciple relationship with the priest who had lived in this dilapidated church. So he got busy, and he started rebuilding that church, stone by stone, brick by brick. First, he did something that was not quite right. He went to his father's store, who was a silk merchant who lived in town there and was quite successful. He took some of the cloths from his father, and he went out and he traded them for building materials and coins. And when he went back to the church, he tried to give the priest there the coins, but he refused them because they had not come through his own labor, but he had stolen from his father. Afterwards, St. Francis, before perhaps he had discovered all of his courage and all of his faith, like many of us perhaps would have done with a powerful, domineering father, he hid out in a cave for the next month because he knew that his father would be quite angry at what he had done. And so after that month, he returned back to town, and his father had him bound up and thrown into a cellar and treated him quite harshly for the stuff that he did. And then he took him and he decided that he was going to take it out legally, and that St. Francis, Francesco, as he is called then, named his father loved all things French. His wife was French. He traveled to France often, and he nicknamed his son Francesco, or meaning France. And so he brought his son to court, and it was there that St. Francis said that he renounced all of his inheritance from his father, that he was no longer interested in it. He had had the spiritual awakening, and in his mind, he was to live a life of poverty. He listened to the words of Jesus about that birds do not sow, nor do they reap. And yet, Heavenly Father is able to provide for them. And so he reasoned in himself, why should I be a money grubber? Why should I go into business? I will live free like the animals, and I will reap from the land whatever it is that God gives to me. And so this is the way he had decided to lead his life. And he left behind his father's patrimony, his wealth, everything. And then he went out to live in nature. and to walk among the trees, and he was a great lover of nature and of the animals, and he would even preach to the animals. There was a terrible wolf in one town who had been creating a lot of problems for that town. And so St. Francis, hearing about this, went out to the wolf. And the wolf came to him, and he spoke to him, and he pacified him. And this is the kind of influence, because he was so sincere in his desire to follow the cross and the Christ. And as I say, in the beginning, he thought that to rebuild the church meant to rebuild the physical church that he was in, and so he did so. And through that experience, then, he started to draw people to him. He had that kind of magnetism about him. The people wanted to be around him, and even to follow the lifestyle that he had chosen, which was so severe. And yet he had hundreds and eventually thousands who came to want to emulate him. There were women then, Claire, chief amongst them, who came. And so they too wanted to start an order based on his principles. And then there were householders who were not ready or not able to give up the things of this world, and so he created an order for them as well, the third order. And so it spread like that, and then he realized that he needed to get sanction from Rome in order to have this really turn into something. And so he went to the Pope. And it's very rare that they grant new orders. And yet, because the Pope had a dream, and in that dream, he saw that the church was falling down. And there was a small, and it is said that he, St. Francis, was not a handsome man, but he is also small, and there was a small man who had come to him the day before petitioning to create this order, and he was propping the church back up. And so then the church expanded and became the Catholic, the Roman Catholic Church itself. And through the order, some thought, then the church could be saved from much of the decadence and the things that were not right that had come to pass within the church. And so St. Francis and his order stood as a bulwark towards the church. And is that what Jesus meant by rebuild my church? But once the orders were approved of by Rome, St. Francis began to withdraw more and more. And he went up into a cave, and there he was intensely praying and fasting and wanting to know only God, only God. And then the truth of it came. Rebuild my church, the church of consciousness, the church of the inner soul, the temple of the soul. And this is the ultimate reconstruction project, is to so transform oneself that it becomes something new, something sacred, something precious. Now, St. Francis, in order to avoid any kind of egotism, always thought very little of himself. But through the transformation that he went through, he was the first in history to show signs of the stigmata, that is, the bleeding in the hands and in the heart and in the feet of the crucified Christ. And so this took on a new life. And so many people came to him, seeing him, his body, as a holy relic. And yet he himself never saw himself as anything special. But he wanted to only serve the Christ, the Christ within him, the Christ in everyone. And so his fame continued to spread, but his suffering was tremendous. It was tremendous. But through that pain, through that suffering, not only did he have an inner transformation in which God completely took possession of him, but also he spread out his fame did and his inspiration did for others to seek out God. So this is what one individual did. And he is famous throughout Christendom and throughout the world as one of the great saints, and it is indeed justified. To rebuild your church means to really get to work inside of yourself. Now, we don't need to throw ashes on our food. As Mother said, this is not a path of sackcloth and ashes. And yet we need to be careful that we don't succumb to the things of the world. And the test is this. Is there anything in our life that is more important than our connection with God? It is such an interesting thing. I had a letter recently from an individual who had been following the spiritual path for many, many years. And they are currently in a state where they don't have any draw, any attraction for the spiritual at all. And this can happen, and it's one of the great mysteries, how someone can be in touch with higher realms, how they can have inner experiences that are so completely real, so completely transforming in the moment. And yet, later on, that begins to just dissipate. It's like one of those stages in life that you go through and you go, yeah, that's something that I used to do. But you really can't connect with it or imagine yourself doing that anymore. And this is the way the spiritual path becomes for people. And this veil of ignorance, so to speak, begins to be drawn over. Now, when Papa was doing his sadhana, he had but one fear, and that was the fear that he would forget God, that he would somehow have that veil draw over him, and that he would no longer seek out God. He would no longer have the divine bliss that he was experiencing. He was very, very intent upon that. And behind that was the tremendous desire and love for God alone. We must be aware that in this life, there are obstacles, there are oppositional forces. Now, some of them come from the outside. Sometimes people around us don't approve of the path that we're on. They're perhaps jealous of the time and the energy that we put into it. They think that we're on the wrong path and so on. There are so many different things that can seem to be obstacles in our life. I remember the time when I'd just been on the path for a few years, but had just really had my first place to call my own that I didn't share with anybody else. And I was setting up my altar, and I had a cloth that I made, and I put pictures of all the masters on it. I had my meditation rug that I sat on, and since it was a small studio apartment, anybody who walked in through the front door would see my altar too. I was a little bit shy about this, and then I thought, well, who would come? And in the first week, my parents came, and my brother, both my brothers and their families came, and my grandmother came. Everybody walked through that first week. I couldn't believe it. And as is common in my family, everybody would look, but nobody commented. So off they went. I had no idea what they thought about it. But I was inoculated then. I didn't need to have any fear about what anybody else thought. And gradually, over time, all such considerations left me. When Mother first asked me to start giving talks, she said, I don't want you to just speak philosophy. I want you to speak from your own experience. Well, I had never shared my experiences, all of them, with anybody. I had shared some with Mother, and the rest I felt like she knew anyway. And at one point, after she had made me a minister, she made me a Yogacharya, she had said that I had gone through, at that point, almost all the experiences that she had of the mystical crucifixion. And it let me know that she was keeping track. But that putting it out there. My most sacred experiences, those things that meant the most to me in my life. And what would people think about it? Would some people doubt? Would some people see them wrongly? Who knew? Once it goes out there, people can do what they want to with it. And so I had to let that go. It was not of my concern. My part was to speak the truth as God gives it to me. To relay those experiences that He chooses to give out. There are many that He does not, and it's all according to Him. As I talked about in the posting from this morning, I sat down to do some writing for the posting. It came out completely different than what I had even thought about when I started. And it all came rushing out, and He was giving me the internal experiences He's having me write about it. And so oftentimes this is the case when I sit and give a talk to you. Sometimes I have a title, not usually. I have a writing, a reading that I will read. But other than that, very little. And then He starts to speak through me. And it's very interesting because sometimes He can give me an entire talk before I give this talk. And I'll think, oh, that's what God's going to talk about this morning. And it's not anything of what He talks about later on. It's a complete new thing to me. And there are times when He says something, and I think, well, that's very interesting. I had never thought about it that way. He gives something brand new. It's a stream of consciousness that streams through my mind. And I'm a witness to it. But it is God who does it. And why do I say God? It is because it is uplifting. It is inspiring. It is filled with His divine presence. Now, your mind is a very interesting thing. Most people have the privacy of their own thoughts, and that's as it should be. But to connect in with God's mind is the most tremendous thing. Suddenly, there is a stream of consciousness coming to you. And it is exciting. It is transforming. It comes as brand new. And even if something sounds like a very traditional kind of truth, a quote from a Bible or some kind of knowledge that we've had from before, when it comes directly from God, it's fresh. It's brand new. It's as if it had never been said or thought before. Because it's coming fresh from the source. And there is nothing more tremendous than having this stream of consciousness come through you. And it's part of our inheritance. It's part of the kingdom of heaven that we inherit. And that is ours. And yet we spend our days doing what? Thinking what? Keeping our minds on what? Now, meditation is a tough business. It really is. We sit down to meditate, and we're not used to disciplining our minds, teaching it to focus upon a single thought, or a mantra, or a point of consciousness. We're used to just letting the mind go in every direction that it wants to. And so, at first, it's learning to bring the mind into a single focus. We do that through our Hong Sa, through our Ram Nam Mantra, through Kriya. And we bring our mind into a state of stillness. We keep going with the mantra until the mind becomes still. When it becomes still, we begin to reflect or manifest those things of divine consciousness when that is our intent. We do not become a nothing. That's the wrong concept. It is true, the traditional way that I thought of myself, of being in relationship with this world, I have a name, I have an occupation, I have a place where I reside, and so on. all of those things are laid to rest. And what do I discover? I discover that I am connected with a beginningless, endless consciousness. When I think of when was I born, there is no answer to that. I know when this body was born, and one day this body will give up the ghost. All bodies do eventually. And so that is a natural process. But it's not me in the greater sense. It's not the I or the great I am. And the great I am extends beyond when I was born into this body. It continues far past the time when I will leave this body. Therefore, it is beginningless and it is endless. It is expansive. So oftentimes in our day-to-day thinking, we're very, very narrow in our attention and our consciousness. And somebody who is depressed, for instance, it's like they have a dark cloud around them. And they can't see beyond that. Now that is the tamasic state. The rajasic state is something else. The mind is very, very activated. But it's focused on the things of this material realm. I've worked with some people who have had gambling addictions. And when they talk about going gambling, their eyes dilate, they light up, they are alive. And it is true with some people who are thieves and who are liars. They actually get excited, they get infused with life energy. Now that's all very negative kinds of rajasic energy. There are others who have a positive. They love to entertain, or they love the business and doing good things for other people. And yet it's still rajasic energy, even when it's focused on doing good deeds for others. There's ego that's attached to it. And then there is the sattvic, and the sattvic is the cool, the smooth, the calm. And that's what we achieve in meditation. Now, the tamasic and the rajasic, that dampening energy and that activating energy, will come and they will act as temptations in order to steal the mind away. And it's interesting when you are in meditation how quickly the mind can go from one thing to another. Speed of light is nothing compared to speed of mind. But as you begin to get this sense of stillness inside, this sense of quiet, this inward focus of the mind, and everything slows down, gradually, gradually, you begin to get focused on that stillness. When I first went into my year of silence and solitude, I'd been traveling and speaking a lot. And I knew that there was just a certain kind of energy that would follow me into the silence, at least for the first little while. For the first couple of weeks, there's just this energy of movement, of doing, of speaking. And gradually it began to settle down, growing into a greater stillness. And as that stillness began to deepen, it began to open up the greatness of spirit that exists all around us. That lovely saying from the Gospel of St. Thomas that the kingdom of heaven is all over this earth, but who has the eyes to see it and the ears to hear it? It is inside of you. It is all around you. We live in an ocean of bliss. In the posting this morning, I talked about the air is trembling. And I've had this experience many, many times of both seeing and feeling the very air around me tremble with the power of God. Now that is not just something for me only. That is something that we may all experience. It's universal. All of these experiences that I speak of are universal for those who have eyes to see and ears to hear. But we must make the spiritual practice, and if we do not, then we may very well fall asleep to the very truths that before had seemed so self-evident to us. We must keep that fire stoked for God realization. If we are to have any fear in life, it should be the fear that we will forget God and that the world will once again reassert itself. Now, we may be in a battle royal for keeping that spiritual flame alive and that the world really demands from us or seems to demand from us that we give it its all, our all. So we don't always feel that we're the most perfect spiritual being when we're in the midst of the battle. Not at all. Many times when we're closest to the goal, we feel the furthest away from it because we're so conscious of those things that are interfering with our perfect apprehension of God consciousness. And this is all right, but it should not make us discouraged. But rather, when oppositional forces rear their heads, we should know that the divine goal is very close indeed. And to fight all the harder to get through those obstacles so that we may know the one peace, the one joy, the one bliss, the one consciousness, the one intelligence that is behind everything that is. For those who have had addictions, for those who feel like the world calls to them so greatly, just connect that to God. Say, God, I want to feel drawn to you as much as those times in my life when I have felt in love with someone or that I have wanted something so badly. I want to feel that way with you. Because love is the most powerful force. And that's the thing that St. Francis had, you see. And all the great spiritual masters, they had love for God. They wanted God and realization more than anything of this world. Now, you don't have to sell everything and go out and seek God. You can be right where you are. That is where the path that Lari Mahasaya showed us. The householder yogi. And by being consciously aware, does anything take precedence over God? In my consciousness, in my life, in my actions. And if it does, then I cut it out. Very ruthless. Master was talking about coming to America, and he had been a tea drinker all the time in India. And he got here, and in social situations, people gave him some coffee. And then he found himself making coffee for himself, but he noticed that it had a very strong draw on him. And he didn't like that. He didn't like anything that seemed to demand or command his attention. He was master of himself, so he cut coffee out right now. And if we look at the things in our life that seem to demand our attention more than God, and then to make sure that God takes precedence, put God first. Think of Him first. Your loyalty, your love, your everythingness goes to Him first. And when you do that, you follow the path of the cross and the Christ by whatever name or by whatever religion you follow. And God will lift you up. He will put you through every experience that is required. the same intelligence that has gone into creating this entire universe, is existing right inside of you, and when it gets activated for your highest realization, it goes to work and it does everything that is required. You don't have to worry about that. You merely keep your mind on God and love Him first. And then you'll find yourself standing on the threshold of eternity, where heaven and nature meets. And God is full, vibrant, powerful, filled with light and intelligence and everything good. And you do not need to fear. You do not need to fear God. Yes, He may take your life. He may pound you and grind you into sacred dust. But it is all for your highest good. And what you get as a result is so tremendous, so much more than what you even could have imagined, that you will get down on your knees and you will thank Him. And you will wonder, why did I even delay for a moment knowing this God, this divine consciousness, this sacredness? And so this is our path. And you too stand on the threshold. Enter in. And the Christ will merge in you, and you will merge in Him. And that's what He meant when He said sup. He didn't mean talking about sitting down and sharing a meal. You merge into that divine consciousness. You merge into God consciousness. And you and He become one, forever and for all times. So I give you my pranams. I bow to the light that is within you. May God ever lift you and inspire you to rise up into that divine consciousness, that you may know Him and love Him and become one with Him. God, Christ, Gurus.